Welcome to the California Appellate Podcast, a discussion of timely trial tips and the latest cases and news coming from the California Court of Appeal and the California Supreme Court. And now your hosts, Tim Cole and Jeff Lewis.
Welcome, everyone. I am Jeff Lewis.
And I'm Tim Kowal. Both Jeff and I are certified appellate specialists, and as uncertified podcast co-hosts, we try to bring our audience of trial and appellate attorneys some legal news and perspectives they can use in their practice. As always, if you find this podcast helpful, please recommend it to a colleague.
And if you don't find it helpful, recommend it to your opposing counsel.
Okay, one more case this week, Jeff, that I thought would be kind of a groundbreaker for our audience. It had some terms that I was not aware of. Tell us about this Casola case, Jeff.
Yeah, first of all, this will be of huge interest to those who practice in the Ninth Circuit more than the state court. So Corey Webster, turn up your volume, and Fran Campbell, turn down the volume on this podcast. I do a lot of anti-slap cases. I'm familiar with terms like slap, anti-slap, and slap back. This week, I learned new terms I'd never heard before. Snap, super snap, and a snapback in terms of the interplay of removal and remand between the state courts and the federal courts. So let me talk to you about the Casola v. Dexcom decision coming out of the Ninth Circuit on April 10th. A snap and a super snap refer to tactics used by a defendant to remove a case from state court to the federal court before the lawsuit is served in the case of a snap, or in some cases, before the clerk of the court has even processed a complaint and issued a summons, which is known as a super snap, and some proposed legislation to address these problems that's pending before Congress to allow a remand motion of these kind of snaps, and that's called a snap back. Doesn't exist yet.
Before I read this case, Jeff, I wasn't aware of any of these things. I didn't know there were people out there with their ear to the ground to see if there had been a case filed but not yet served on my client.
Yeah, one of the interesting side notes of this case is discusses a subscription service by Courthouse News, a free plug for them by the Ninth Circuit, where you can be alerted to case filing and have an email delivered to your box with a copy of the complaint, even before the clerk had done its thing in terms of processing it, stamping it, and issuing a summons. And particular genesis of this case was a filing on a Wednesday of Thanksgiving of a complaint. It was presented for filing electronically, but it wasn't processed before on the following Monday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we're all familiar with that situation where you file a motion or a pleading, and you're waiting. You kept checking in with your paralegal or your filing clerk and asked, did we get the conform copy back? Did the clerk file it? And you're waiting with bated breath to see if it gets filed timely or if it's kicked for some technical reason.
Yeah, you and I have talked in other podcasts about waiting for notices of appeal to be processed, especially in the Orange County Superior Court. Although I will say somebody fixed something down there because things are really moving a lot quicker in my experience in the Orange County Superior Court. You're not waiting as long for documents to be processed.
So in this case, there was a complaint that was e-filed, but it was several days actually before it was actually filed. And then this Courthouse News service, I wasn't aware there was such a service that could basically intercept or they had access to files, complaints or other filings that had been e-filed, but not yet made their way to the official court record.
You know, and I am familiar with the services that give you a heads up on case names. Case filings with names of the parties. I wasn't, prior to reading this decision, aware of the service that actually gives you a copy of the unconformed or pre-conformed copy of the pleading that's been presented electronically.
Yeah, but it seemed like there was pre-existing litigation. This was one in a saga of litigation. So counsel were aware, they were anticipating there was going to be a new lawsuit filed. And so they either got a subscription to Courthouse News Service or already had a subscription and were watching and waiting for this state court complaint to be e-filed.
Yeah. And by the way, this whole process, snap removal and super snap removal, is to do an end run around something called the forum defendant rule. You know, there's a limit on the types of cases that could be removed from state court to federal court if any of the parties are properly joined and served as defendants, happen to be citizens of the forum state, you run afoul of the forum defendant rule and removal is no longer an option. So to get around that barrier to removal, some savvy firms employ the either snapback or super snapback procedure. In this particular case, the Ninth Circuit ruled on the super snap removal that it's not proper, meaning...
Yeah. Yeah, well, Super Snap is not available, but it's still not certain whether you can do the snap removal. And again, Jeff, when you went over this rule of the home rule, was it the home defendant rule? I had a flashback to I remember that was on one of my Civ Pro flashcards when studying for my civil procedure exam back in law school. The home defendant rule. So I had a that came flooding back that there is still there's federal diversity jurisdiction for this case, but removal under the removal statute is not available when the defendant is in his or her or its home state.
Right, right. I guess we should have had a trigger warning at the beginning of this podcast that this might bring back terrible emotions for those studying for the bar in terms of civil procedure. So ultimately, look, the Ninth Circuit ruled when a complaint is presented to a clerk, but the clerk hasn't done their thing in terms of the stamping and processing, you can't take advantage of the snap procedure and affect a super snap. The Ninth Circuit, in its footnote one, dodged the question. It did not decide whether a normal snap, an unsuper snap removal that occurs after filing but before service is appropriate. Other circuits have ruled on this issue. The 10th Circuit, I believe, forbids snap removals, and the second, third, and fifth do allow for snap removals. And I guess it's unknown whether the Ninth Circuit will approve or not of this process. And I should also note that in 2020, Congress was considering an act called the Removal Jurisdiction Clarification Act of 2020, which would, if it had passed, introduce a snapback provision, which would authorize the filing of remand motions in certain snap cases if they're timely made.
Well, let's go back over that. When you mentioned that that was the 10th and 3rd, or you said 10th Circuit forbids snap removals. But again, the 9th Circuit here didn't get to the question of snap removals. Remember, the difference is that in this case, the complaint was e-filed, but it was not yet actually filed by the time the defendant, the home state defendant, filed the notice of removal. So at that point, you've got a notice of removal in district court seeking to remove a state court filing that the state courts have no record of.
Yeah. And the key here is when you're filing your notice of removal, if you have to attach a copy of the state court pleadings. If you don't have a state court pleading that has a stamp on it because the stamp hasn't been affixed by the clerk, you're going to run afoul of the super snap rule.
That was one of the interesting tidbits about this case is that the notice of removal, instead of giving a Superior Court case number of the state court case, it gave the courthouse news reference number, indicating that it had not been accepted as filed by in the state court. And again, and just to clarify for those who may be puzzling, what is the significance of filing in service on the removal procedure? And it's under 28 U.S.C. 1441. Which is the removal statute, subdivision B2 says that the home defendant, the rule that home defendants may not remove applies to defendants who have been served. So that's the textual element there. That well, if I'm a defendant on a filed case, but I haven't yet been served, then I have this small window where I can file a notice of removal. But as soon as I'm served, then I'm hosed because under 1441 B2, then I become a served home state defendant who cannot file a notice of removal. So that's this split of the circuit split on the snap procedure that the 10th Circuit. Did you say the 10th Circuit allows? Oh no, forbids it. But the second, third, and fifth circuits are apparently more textualist and say, well, 1441 only applies to a home state defendant who has been served. And so if it's been filed but not yet served, then you have a narrow window to file a notice of removal. So but the Ninth Circuit didn't get there because it has to at least be filed first. That's the threshold issue is it has to be filed at a minimum. You can't take a notice of removal of a case that hasn't been filed. And the Ninth Circuit said, well, there are different definitions of filed. If there is a statute of limitations issue and you're trying to get to the courthouse to beat the statute of limitations, you're filing it on the last day, then if the clerk takes, a day, 2 days, a week to get around to officially filing it, you're okay, presumably for statute of limitations purposes. But for removal purposes, specifically under this 28 U.S.C. 1441, for the home rule, the home state defendant who has not been served, that applies only to lawsuits that have been actually filed, as in officially processed as filed.
Yeah. You know, one final footnote I'll put on this case discussion, and that is there's a reason that you and I haven't heard about this procedure and why it's not tested on the state bar. And that is in looking at some legal commentators who have commented on this proposed bill before Congress, it rarely comes up. There's a very small segment of the bar in a very small segment of cases that employ this SNAP procedure. And so some commentators have suggested that maybe this is a solution in search of a problem.
Well, yeah, but this, this case, you know, as we noted, the defendant's attorneys were anticipating this lawsuit being filed in state court. And apparently, they very much wanted it in federal court and knew that they couldn't do it because their defendant was domiciled in California and would be barred from removal under the home state defendant rule at least after their client was served. And so, they wanted to make sure that they filed that notice of removal before it was before their defendant was served. And in these days of you know, in this that type of case, obviously it would be difficult. You know where the parties can be found.
Right. Right.
Okay. So that we just wanted to get in and out with that important case. If you practice in federal court and are looking to get your cases, your client's cases removed to federal court, you want to be aware of SNAP removals, super SNAP removals. And the legislative proposal, what is it
snap back?
The snap back. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's going to do it for today. If you have any suggestions for us or future episodes, or you want to mail Tim some sugar super snap peas, he would enjoy eating those. Each week, we cover issues to lay the groundwork for an appeal when preparing for trial. And that's it for today.
Yep. We'll see you next time.
You have just listened to the California Appellate Podcast, a discussion of timely trial tips and the latest cases and news coming from the California Court of Appeal and the California Supreme Court. For more information about the cases discussed in today's episode, our hosts, and other episodes, visit the California Appellate Law Podcast website at calpodcast.com. That's calpodcast.com. Thanks to Jonathan Caro for our intro music. Thank you for listening, and please join us again.